I'm picking out Lil, picking out, no. We're picking out a big shot, one girl. One, I think she's Swiss. They're shutting in her belly. And some people is bleeding. I don't know really what happened. And they've been taken away by the ambulance. This is amazing, man. Two tanks coming down in this narrow street. And they shoot me. Okay. So slowly, slowly we're backing out. Now they're pointing to a cameraman. They're pointing to the... No! 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 Come on! They're shooting on the cameraman. They're shooting on media people. Oh, shit! They're shooting on media people right here. What? They're pointing at me now. Shit. Now some people just moved on a little road on the side and they shoot at them. But this is war, man. They're shooting at pacifists in Bayshala right now. Three people got injured. One got injured pretty bad, and they're shooting on media people and everybody right here. Now they're going towards this car of this television. Just shot them. My battery is going to go right now. So I have to stop now. Okay, just tell everybody this is happening right now. This is happening right now. There's no other media here. Except a couple of cameras that have been shot. So you have to tell this to everybody. They're shooting people. They're shooting pacifists.
I got an entire tour canceled as a result of writing this song, and I was thoroughly denounced. I've never been so thoroughly denounced. Well, not until the past couple weeks, anyway.
And yes, you are tuned to Bathurst Spears Broadsides, the April 14th, 2002 show. Stay with us.
Did you see them praying? Watch the army marching in. As they clubbed old women, did you see the general grin? Watch the stones fly and the snipers taking aim. On Shatila's birthday, it's a calculated game. And they're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. Did you hear him screaming? Watch the horror on his face as he hid for cover in a tiny unprotected space. Did you hear his father pleading? There is a child here trying to protect his son, who yelled in horror and in fear that they're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. Did you feel the wind blow from the helicopter blades? Did you smell the tear gas, see the demolition raids? Did you see the rockets and the dumb bullets fly? Did you feel the horror to watch one more young boy die as they're gunning down the children of Jerusalem? Did you see the roadblocks letting nobody go past? Watch the blood flow as time is running fast. See someone's brother taking his last breath, so close to the hospital, but closer still to death. Then they're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. Did you hear the fat cat say it's not what it appears? It's an armed uprising, a realization of our fears. Do you hear them chanting that this is their homeland? They want what's ours, and we've got to make a stand. So we're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. Some want power, and it seems the world's theirs to give. Some just want peace and a decent place to live. Some talk of destiny and what their God has willed. while a mother weeps that her 9-year-old's been killed, and they're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. They're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. They're gunning down the children of Jerusalem. They're gunning down the children of Jerusalem.
And we're beginning a little late this morning. This is your host, Robert Norse, on Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes Piers Broadsides here at 96.3 FM. Or if you're checking us out from elsewhere, www.microradio.net/FRSC, where we stream and stream, although apparently we stream less than we used to stream because they raised the price. So I think only a few folks, maybe five, can get in at any one time. But if you want to send your contributions to Free Radio Santa Cruz, you can get more information on that by calling 427-4523, which gives you our line, our hotline, so to speak, where you can leave a message of any length. I guess not any length, but a relatively short message. And you can get that public service announcement on the air, and you can also get information about how to give us the donations we need. We don't spend a lot of time with talkathons, marathons, sellathons, and commercials. We don't spend any time, in fact, or very little. And, we rely on you. So if you like what you hear, you want to hear more of it, or you want to become involved in the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, hey, that's the way to do it. 427-4523, leave a message as to where we can reach you. You might even have a program that you think should be on Free Radio because it isn't covered currently, and it isn't covered in the mainstream media, because our station is, in fact, I think, the alternative media in Santa Cruz. Maybe you want to add the Green Press to that. Maybe the forthcoming Alarm, if and when it comes out, a new publication. But otherwise, it's fluff and stuff and puff and guff, as usual, with the Scent Anal, the Metro, the Good Times, and, of course, the Kitty on a Hill, plus the assorted little mini weeklies up there, Redwood Review, Fish Wrap Live, and the other bi-weekly reviews, the Mid-County Post, the Capitola and Aptos Times, not to forget the San Jose Mercury News. Why I'm giving time to all these folks, I don't know, but actually these are publications you can write letters to, and some of them do print letters, particularly the Mid-County Post. City on a Hill has been notoriously bad about printing letters. In the last year, it has virtually had no homeless civil rights stuff. A couple of letters up there on campus is really depressing. It sort of seems to be complementary to the failure to do anything about the Bush's terrorist war, or wars, I should say, and it's a planned upcoming war against Iraq, the ongoing militarization and military support of the Israeli incursion. Aggression in the Palestinian area. So I would love to see letters out on civil rights for homeless issues, which is what my show is all about. I'm concerned about the city's criminalization of poor people, its failure to enact rent control laws and other laws that would protect low-income folks, renters, and, of course, ongoing police misconduct, which seems to be being a sort of a... Well, it seems to be business as usual, but the fact that we're in the middle of a national crisis makes it even more ominous that police officers like Sergeant Baker, and I name names only because it's individuals who are making choices here as well as institutions that are allowing them to do it. Baker arrested me, as listeners know, for the third time in 9 months, all on citizen complaints, and took me into custody. I thought all three of those charges had been dropped. The most recent one, which was being arrested at City Council on the complaint of Mayor Crone for raising my arm in a "you're a fascist" gesture, a Sieg Heil, a Heil Crone gesture, silent one. That was dismissed on March 29th, so I don't have to face a year in jail and a $1,000 fine and a jury trial for that one. That's nice. But a second one has come back, and that is the Baker in custody arrest, where he took me away in handcuffs, held me in a squad car, took my tape recorder, confiscated my tape, as I sat at a table with petitions and voter registration forms in front of the New Leaf Market, in those final days of the public space there, when it wasn't an enclosed area that was the private purview of the two merchants who now essentially run that area during the day and control the lion's share of the public space there, Matisse Selman of Sushi Now and Ali Kav, Alibaba's Cafe. And I was giving out petitions, and Selman complained that I was blocking the sidewalk with my table. And as you may remember, before, Selman and Ka blocked the sidewalk with the connivance of the Redevelopment Agency and the City Council and the Downtown Association. Before, they blocked the sidewalk with a huge green fence that now makes it, well, it cuts the public space at least by two-thirds there, probably more, but at least by two-thirds. There was a considerable area, and my little table didn't block the sidewalk at all, of course, but Baker claimed that he had been videotaping the whole matter, and he could show and he could prove mathematically, scientifically, that somebody had eaten a strawberry shower. No, that's a line from the Caine Mutiny and Humphrey Bogart, but that there was blockage of the sidewalk. And it's preposterous. There wasn't. It's a First Amendment violation. An attorney who recently won a $10,000 settlement against the LAPD for one of our very own local Santa Cruzans has agreed to take my case, or had agreed, and he depended to some extent on his calendar, where we're going to sue the city and Selman, I assume Selman as well, for false arrest. That is to say, harassment, false report, and that's something that the citizen has a power to do, is to essentially turn back the tables on the people who are trying, just as a matter of course, day by day, because they feel somehow it's their right, from their superior position as business people, or their position as police officers, or their position on the dais of the city council, to exercise a kind of overweening power over the rest of the citizenry, where the citizens have to do what they say, or somehow the police and the whole legal system comes into play to enforce the will and the wishes of a few individuals against the many. And maybe it's presumptuous of me. I know one elected me to speak for the many. I don't feel I speak for the many. I speak for myself when I find my own rights are being violated, and I note that other people seem to have concerns about that too, hence the great hubbub and uproar when I was arrested at City Council after a recess, conveniently called, like drawing a black curtain around it for the rest of the community, by Scott Kennedy, who whispered to Mayor Crone, "Call a recess, call a recess." This was on March 12th at the City Council meeting, where I was arrested again for the Heil Crone silent salute after he had cut off oral communications to a speaker, violating his own promise, the practice at oral communications of providing 30 minutes of oral communications time for speakers, when he rudely told the woman who was at the mic, Susan Zeman, stand away from the mic, or in essence, you'll be excluded from the chamber, with the clear inference, if you don't leave the chamber at the point of that exclusion, you'll be arrested, as I was, and driven and led away in handcuffs. So, there is a kind of a whole nexus of questions going on here. I think you have to name people's names. Interestingly enough, Mayor Crone's name was blacked out of the Sergeant Baker's police report. The names that were repeatedly blacked out were Councilmember Fitzmaurice and Mayor Crone. I think also City Attorney John Barisone. And it's kind of symbolic that these city officials' names would be blacked out, indicating that, yeah, they do like to operate in the darkness. They do like to operate behind the scenes when their actions are obviously an embarrassment to themselves, to the folks concerned about just basic constitutional rights, and to the citizenry generally, and particularly those who elected them, or I suppose even those who support them. You got, you know, the police department and the city attorney are not elected. They seem to have positions for life no matter what they do. Folks may remember that Baker back in 1992 was the subject of a number of investigations. The only investigation I'd ever heard of actually authorized by the city council itself and conducted by a city council subcommittee, but then hastily disbanded by city manager for life, Dick Wilson. Baker was accused by 10 women of improper sexual behavior in terms of improper searches. And Baker had also had a history of harassing homeless people at that time as well. He seemed to have a predilection for arresting me back even then. He seemed to gravitate towards me. He arrested me for failing to provide ID when he knew very well who I was. This after I'd been in the papers repeatedly. He'd contacted me and arrested me before. He was playing a game in which he simply tried to pile on charges, and of course the charges were dropped, but not until I was taken into custody and taken to jail and so forth. Again, the use of the police to harass citizens who are standing up on issues that the city council will not address. And indeed, this has to be done, I think, nationally to end the kind of war mentality that we have going on even this morning. As you heard, my show began late. We, of course, had this very dramatic dialogue, I guess, from Ramallah, which Skidmark Bob found on the internet, and was playing off that from several days ago. You're going to have this kind of foreign intervention. It takes, I think, well, it may take years of organizing to stop it, as it took years of organizing to stop the Vietnam War, which everyone seems to now is trying to, at least those in power are trying to rewrite, and those in Hollywood are trying to rewrite. But it has to be done. And I'm always mightily heartened when people like Cassandra Brown and Amy Courtney stand up for their rights in court, as they did when they unfurled a banner next to the American flags that had been posted by the jingoists on the overpasses near Scotts Valley, with the complicit authorization or complicit acceptance by the Caltrans and by the Scotts Valley police. But when their banner, which said at what cost, went up, it was torn down. And of course, the federal court ruled you can't do that. You got, there have to be uniform rules. If you're going to eliminate one person's banner, you got to take them all down. Now, I haven't checked the overpasses of Caltrans. I don't know if the flags are up there yet, or if they're allowing other banners to be put up there. But I know Caltrans appealed, and I'm still hoping to get an update on that from Cassandra and Amy. And they indeed expressed some concerns about my obstructing the sidewalk arrest, which apparently is now back on the court docket, which may mean that the woman who was arrested with me, Zoe Einbinder, is also going to be back on the docket again for not just harmless but socially valuable activity, which is First Amendment behavior downtown, trying to mobilize the community in a peaceful way, but a very visible way, to stop the kind of merchant privatization that is going on downtown. In what we thought were our public spaces, what we thought was a community area. And it's not just happening, of course, at Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe. It's happening up at the Taqueria Vallarta, where there's a new fence there, and what used to be Hippie Corner way up there. It's happening in front of Logos Bookstore. It's happening in front of Hoffman's Bakery. And some folks are saying, well, why don't you just protest all those places? And I say, sure. But the main reason I focused on Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now is because these places were going after a particular group of people there. They weren't just expanding their business. They were part of a specific conspiracy. Yes. It wasn't even a secret conspiracy. It was a public conspiracy. It became public, I should say, very shortly. It began as a secret conspiracy because we weren't invited to the meetings of the Downtown Association where it happened. But it became, on January 4th, Dan White broke the news in the Sentinel that on January 8th, at that city council meeting this year, there would be a move to privatize and set up that fence and set up that entire private area that previously had been public, with the aim of getting rid of the young people that were considered to be a nuisance, unattractive, a harassment, and so forth. We never saw any specific clear records. We got lots of anecdotes, lots of little stories about that. I spent a lot of time down there, I did during January, February, and March, not so much recently. And, you know, it's true that the same people do tend to show up there a lot. And it's, you know, it's true that some people may feel uncomfortable there. And I'm sure that there were numerous small incidents that happened there. But instead of dealing with using negotiation, using mediation, instead of using techniques that actually would open the area to everyone, they close the area to everyone but the friends and customers of Ali Baba and Matisse Selman, or Ali Ka and Matisse Selman. And that actually, I think, ironically, has produced a cutback in business. And that cutback is because people don't want to, first of all, the whole idea of this fishbowl area where people sit in this green fenced-in area is kind of preposterous. People don't like it. It feels uncomfortable, but also because some of us are continuing to raise our voices as we go by. Boycott Alibaba's Cafe, boycott Sushi Now, boycott New Leaf Market, which has said absolutely nothing during this whole thing, though it's the main business there, and obviously could have taken a stand for constitutional rights and for essentially the customers, the counterculture customers that I don't think like to see people run away from the downtown. New Leaf Market has done nothing, and hence I've called for a boycott of all three of them. And again, a public boycott where you are saying to these folks, not I'm never going to spend money at you ever again, with your group ever again, with your store, but I want you to sit down and evolve a better way. Make that fenced-in area an area that everyone can use. And indeed, there are some constitutional questions as to whether the planter area in that fenced-in area can be is available to everyone to use anyway. And then that may become the subject of a peaceful, nonviolent demonstration in the times to come. And we do have times coming. We have a Right to Sleep Summit coming up May 3rd through 5th here in Santa Cruz. It used to be through the 4th, but I'm kind of beginning to call it through the 5th because there's going to be a long meeting open to the public of the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project at the same place, Thomas Levitt's house, as the Right to Sleep Summit. And that really is essentially the same kind of thing we're discussing. We're organizing to find out if we have the person power to break the back of the sleeping ban. May 3rd and 4th, we're going to try to find that out. And if there is that, the commitment to do that throughout the summer. In Santa Barbara, it took months of organizing, thousands of dollars, one full-time and several part-time organizers, I believe it was, with Mitch Snyder from the Creative Community for Nonviolence in Washington, D.C., coming to Santa Barbara full-time to organize for the August 1986 Come to Santa Cruz, to Santa Barbara, Come to the Fig Tree, Go to Sleep, Go to Jail demonstration that eventually persuaded the city council before that date to end the sleeping sections of their camping ban, which they did. And then 4 years later, an opportunist politician replaced them, not with any evidence that there'd been a magnet effect or any improper behavior, but just against a series of protests that had been put into play around shelter issues around City Hall and that had gotten some press. So I think the way to proceed is to see if we have the kind of numbers that are necessary. And there are other people, of course, mobilizing at this Right to Sleep Summit for other purposes, too. There's people coming from encampments up and down the coast that are or have been illegal because there is no way to legally form homeless communities or even to find to sleep separately as homeless individuals in many cities throughout this throughout the coastal states, throughout the country. Mike Rotkin has falsely said, former council member, now instructor, probably running for council again, Michael Rotkin, that and a big supporter of the sleeping ban, that Santa Cruz is somehow a kindler, gentler place because it has a sleeping ban and doesn't just drive people out like he says Carmel does, and that's probably accurate. And he says every city in the country has sleeping ban or sleeping ban type policies. It's just not true. A federal court, for example, in Miami has ruled that there have to be legal places for people to sleep or else police can't do anything at all with homeless people they come upon. And indeed, they've set up a whole protocol for the police, which we call the Pottinger Guidelines, which say that if a police officer wants to approach a homeless person on a so-called life-sustaining misdemeanor, which is lighting a fire to keep warm at night, covering up, setting up a tent, even going to the bathroom, they have to have a shelter place available for them, or perhaps clearly demonstrate that facilities are available. And the homeless population and their attorneys won $1,500,000 in federal court when the police acted in an abusive fashion to criminalize essentially the existence of homeless people. Because if you criminalize someone's sleep, as Santa Cruz does, and as Miami did until this federal court decision in 1992, finalized in 1998, called the Pottinger decision, for those of you who want to look it up on the web, P-O-T-T-I-N-G-E-R. Until that happened, there was, this essentially a targeting of a group of people that wholesale violation of constitutional rights. And that's what we find at City Council. And that's what we find through the Downtown Association and the merchants that are supportive of the Downtown Association. That's what we find in the Redevelopment Agency that wishes to proceed with its projects willy-nilly, regardless, with no community input of any sort. There's a whole undemocratic cast to Santa Cruz that is at odds with its reputation and the illusions that it promulgates through its Green Party-endorsed officials. And we're going to be talking about the Green Party Assembly today, too, and what they did. They had a meeting yesterday, and there were actually some positive things to come out of it, though never enough to satisfy me, of course, or not never enough, but not enough in this case, and one can always hope that things are going to get better, and indeed it seems that there may be, and there do seem to be actions and impulses and individuals leading in this direction. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and you have a right to remain silent, but you also have a right to speak. And if you want to call in, you can give a call to 427-3772, or if you're outside the area, 831-427-3772. That's the number in the studio if you want to speak out to the entire community, because that's what we are. We are essentially a loudspeaker that allow people to speak from the privacy of their homes or their phone booths. I guess there aren't any phone booths anymore. There are places on the street where the phones happen to be perched, if you can find 50 cents, to talk to the entire community and about issues that you otherwise would not be able to be heard on until you were able to buy a newspaper or purchase a radio station. And even our station, as you know, is illegal. We are against the law, at least against a number of laws, which violate basic human rights. And one of those, of course, is the corporate seizure of the airwaves. And that's one of the things Free Radio stands against. And doesn't just stand against it on principle. Every day, 24 hours a day, we are putting out word that says the airwaves belong to all of us. Use them. It's really important in these times of government murder, aggressive war, internal repression, and massive local hypocrisy at the government level and at the level of the so-called progressive organizations, that we actually use these powers that we have. So 427-3772 is the number to call. And I'm going to give you a little break and give me a little break. And let's listen to this.
The song goes out, I guess, more now than ever to the Arab American community, but I wrote it more with Latin Americans in mind. Of course, so many folks are in the same boat, hopefully not soon facing indefinite detention for being immigrants. The clouds gather in your forests, drift to my desert town. I think of far-off places as the rain is coming down. You're bent down in the fields, picking fruit there from the vine, and it ends up on my table as it moves on down the line. The moon shines brightly in the night sky. The river flows from south to north. With the changing of the seasons, the birds migrate back and forth. They say that you can't come here, not in the light of day. Somebody has got plans for you, starve at home or hide away. Will we open up the borders, tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal? Watch the giant as it falls. So much travels across these borders. So much is bought and sold. One way goes the gunships, the other comes the gold. Free trade is like a needle, drawing blood straight from your heart. The border's like a prison, keeping friends apart. Will we open up the borders? Tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls. Hear the stockholders cheering. The world's getting smaller. Hear the drowning child crying. Why are the fences growing taller? Some whisper in the shadows, while others count the dollars. Some have suits and ties, others chains and collars. Will we open up the borders? Tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls. May these fortress walls come down. May we meet our sisters and our brothers. Stand arm in arm there in the daylight, no longer fighting one another. Will we stand together? For therein lies our might. Will we understand these words? Workers of the world, unite. Will we open up the borders? Tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls. Open up the borders. Tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls.
And that was David Rovick's much played recently, Living in These Times, and his song, No One is Illegal, to say the least. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You can call in at 427-3772. And what I'm going to read now is an article from this month's issue of Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper published out of San Francisco, one of two, actually, by the American Friends Service Committee, which has lots of local stuff here in Santa Cruz and also some stuff from further down the coast. And that's what I'm going to read to you now. Isla Vista Tent City arises after homeless deaths. And this is important because Isla Vista is the newest tent city, which has arisen in the wake, again, of the cities throughout the country, but particularly on the coast I'm interested in, their failure to allow homeless people to survive. Their insistence it's illegal to be visible anywhere in the homeless area. I mean, in the city limits. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hello. I wanted to know the song, the kind of folk song the fellow sang about Palestine, about Jerusalem.
Oh, they're gunning down the children of Jerusalem?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's called Children of Jerusalem, and again, it's on a CD, Living in These Times. And if you want to get it, you can go on the net. Do you have computer access?
Well, I can get it, I guess. Living in These Times?
Living in These Times. It's www.davidrovics. That's David, R-O-V-I-C-S, all one word, David Rovics.
R-O-V-I-C-S.
.com.
.com, okay.
And you may actually find it at stores. He's got a number of albums out. Again, the name of this one is Living in These Times. There's another one, We Just Want the World. And Free Radio does play a lot of his stuff because it's so, well, timely.
Yeah, right. So that particular one was Children of Jerusalem.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And yeah, Rovix is a great singer. I sometimes get overdosed on Rovix because he has gotten so much attention lately, but he deserves it, and he's putting out the word where, of course, no mainstream media are at all that I can see, or very little. And there are some traditional folk singers, well, not traditional, been around for a longer period of time, like Mark Levy, who've done local stuff, and then this kind of more satirical, I would say, actually, in Levy's case. But and Mark actually lives nearby. He lives right out beyond Boulder Creek there, right beyond Ben Lomond and Boulder Creek. And he may well be at the Right to Sleep Summit. We probably should ask David Rovix to come too. That would ensure that Thomas Levitt's house couldn't be occupied for the next 2 years and be so trashed. We're expecting a lot of people at this summit, more than we thought were going to come. In fact, so much so it looks like we're going to need to do some fundraising to get some porta potties in there, because though there is hot and cold water and plumbing, if you have 100 people, that's a lot of people, and it'd be good to have some emergency facilities. So we're going to be looking at that, as I understand it. Anyway, though, getting back to Isla Vista, Camp Dignity, then which became Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, sort of began to show the way, as did the earlier Seattle Tent City 3, as you can hear, the third of Tent City attempts in Seattle, which actually set up and stayed up and became essentially an emergency shelter system, as the Coral Street Open Air Shelter became a shelter system in Santa Cruz for homeless people. Didn't happen because they applied for permission to the city council. It didn't happen because a great philanthropist offered a lot of money to help them. It happened because homeless people put up their tents and they stayed up. And actually it was done in Santa Cruz in Coral Street under the auspices of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which at one point became the Citizens Committee to Harass the Homeless, as I used to call it in the street shit sheet, under Paul Lee and Paul Fotenhauer and Daryl Darling. They quickly caved in to city pressure when Rotkin and Kennedy decided it was time for Coral Street to be disbanded, and created this myth of great amounts of violence and great amounts of problems there. There were problems. There were real problems, and there were occasional instances of violence, but there was not the kind of lethal violence that happened when that city disbanded, when that tent city was essentially forcibly dispersed. And Rotkin and Kennedy have been called murderers by homeless activists for their role in that. That's the same Scott Kennedy who occupies the city council chair at the present time, and the same Michael Rotkin who is reportedly going to be running for city council, along with Catherine Byers, Cynthia Matthews, and of course the three bad pennies, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, at the next election coming up this November. But this is all beside the point about this article on the Isla Vista Tent City. I'll let it speak for itself. This is by Terry Messman, who will be the keynote speaker at the Right to Sleep Summit, May 3rd through 5th. Some of the most stirring signs of social change in the state of California are springing to life in the affluent seaside city of Santa Barbara and neighboring Isla Vista. It's a development that seems to defy common sense and political logic. You don't look to tourist-oriented resort towns like Santa Barbara for inspiring examples of social justice on the move, but some of the most hope-filled homeless activism in the state is unfolding in this wealthy city located about 100 miles north of Los Angeles. Even here, in the midst of million-dollar mansions on the picturesque coast, poverty, police persecution, and premature deaths stalk the homeless community. Following the deaths of two homeless people during an unusually cold winter, a bold group of homeless advocates took the law into their own hands and set up a tent city in Isla Vista. To awaken the public conscience about the need to create a legal campground. Meanwhile, in adjacent Santa Barbara, the Committee for Social Justice continues to successfully defend homeless people from criminal charges and infractions while working on an innovative proposal to create legal parking areas for homeless vehicle dwellers. In defiance of an ordinance prohibiting overnight camping, a group of homeless activists set up an encampment in the Ansequah Oyo Park in Isla Vista to protest the lack of housing and outdoor living space. Isla Vista, an unincorporated community near Santa Barbara that is home to the University of California at Santa Barbara, UCSB, is very densely populated. Heavy real estate development has pushed homeless people out of empty fields and vacant lots that they used to inhabit. The tent city was set up shortly after two homeless people died in a three-week period. The first one died on Christmas night. Only 3 weeks later, on January 12th, Diva Redwood, a longtime vocal resident and musician, died from what friends called the stress of being homeless. Jenny Jett, an organizer of the encampment, said people decided to hold a camp in at the park because of the shock of the deaths and a pretty good cold snap when it got down to 30 degrees outside. About 15 people started camping out in tents on Sunday evening, January 27th, and steadfastly refused to move as police continually threatened to arrest and cite them for illegal camping. On February 5th, seven camp dwellers were given tickets for illegal camping and are currently awaiting trial, represented by attorney Glenn Maurer. Those tickets have since been dismissed, by the way, thanks to his good work. Glenn Maurer is the man who has championed the necessity defense in Santa Barbara, which has been successfully taken to the appeals level and upheld. The defense that says if you are violating a law, such as the camping law, but you're doing that to avert a greater evil, hypothermia, the kinds of consequences that come with having no place to sleep at all and having to stay awake all night, then the jury can decide that the greater evil and the need to avert it required a necessity of violating the law. And that has been found to be the case in numerous camping tickets in Santa Barbara and is on appeal here in Santa Cruz in the case of the Camp Paradise 3, the appeal that is finally proceeding after the tapes have finally, 4 months later, been secured from the court, according to attorney Chris Fredrickson here in Santa Cruz. I'm reading from an article in Street Spirit about Isla Vista, and then I'll continue that. But the citations did not shut down the camp or erode the campers' resolve. They dug in their heels, vowing to keep the tent city alive unless handcuffed and forcibly removed. The encampment has survived for 2 months now. It was relocated once in February to nearby Estero Park, also known as Teepee Park or Teepee Village. In an unexpected development, the seven defendants cited for violating the county's no camping ordinance discovered they may have been unlawfully charged with violating a non-existent law. The Isla Vista Recreation and Parks District's own council discovered that the county's no camping law doesn't apply to Isla Vista parks, which do not fall under the jurisdiction of Santa Barbara County. Defense attorney Glenn Maurer is filing a demurrer stating the Parks District cannot use the county ordinance to prosecute the homeless defendants and is asking that all charges be dropped. This loophole could easily get these folks off the hook, Maurer predicted, and in fact did, as I mentioned. The surprise of finding that the county's no camping ordinance does not apply to Isla Vista parks initially led the Parks District to consider enacting a sweeping anti-camping law of its own. But the success of the tent city in mobilizing university students and citizens in defense of the homeless has created new hope for a more tolerant approach. Maurer of the Isla Vista Parks District said, "I think as far as establishment people go, they're about as enlightened as we're going to get. I found a certain willingness on their part to consider designating certain sites for camping, and if they do that, that would be a pretty nice accommodation. How about it, Santa Cruz City Council? You have huge numbers of greenbelt areas and Poganip areas and other areas. Why not designate one of the sites that you were supposed to look into in the Camp Paradise issue but refused to return, even though you directed your city manager's office to look into those sites? You refused to get those reports back. How about it?" Continuing with the Santa Barbara article here. Jenny Jett is a housed activist who has been working with homeless people for about 3 years to set up a legal outdoor shelter. "Homeless people are getting tickets, and a solution is to have a legal, safe outdoor sleeping space," she said. "The campaign to establish a safe legal encampment will be a long struggle," Jett said. "It's not something that can happen overnight. We've been trying and trying and going to all the community meetings." Then homeless people electrified the public debate by setting up a tent city without official approval, somewhat the way Camp Paradise was set up, let's say. Besides raising public awareness of the urgent need for a legal campsite, the tent city immediately improved the lives and safety of the homeless occupants. Jett said, "In essence, the tents and the community have increased everybody's standard of living way above what it was. The tents are protecting people from the wind, the cold, the animals, the bugs. People are in a group, so they're safe. The tent city brought out an outpouring of community spirit, Chet said. Everybody worked together. It was just amazing. We got a cooking thing going with a propane stove and a place to wash the dishes. There were food drives. The sororities and fraternities were bringing by food. It was kept clean. There were no problems. Still to this day, there haven't been any problems, and it's been 2 months. The encampment received some badly needed support from students at the nearby UCSB campus. About 60 UCSB students turned out to voice their support on behalf of the homeless encampment at a mid-March meeting of the Isla Vista Recreation and Parks District, the IVRPD. Jett said the university students were very influential in speaking out for the homeless cause at the IVRPD hearing. Students and homeless people live in close proximity to one another in Isla Vista, Jett explained, and many students personally know homeless people and have come to care greatly about the homeless issue, even in an era seemingly marked by student apathy. The UCSB newspaper, The Daily Nexus, has provided positive coverage of the issues surrounding the encampment. Generally positive, though there have been some naysayers. I've checked the back issues of The Daily Nexus. That's been one of the complaints about local Santa Cruz, is that Santa Cruz, which has a huge campus as well, has no daily newspaper. There's a Daily Californian up in Berkeley. There's a Daily Nexus in Santa Barbara. Where's the Daily Santa Cruzan? And now you get this weekly City on a Hill stuff, where they can't seem to print a letter. Another important ally of the Tent City has been the Committee for Social Justice, founded by Peter Marin, a poet, writer, and homeless advocate. When the IVRPD was considering a ban on sleeping and camping in early March, Marin wrote a letter reminding the IVRPD board that his Committee for Social Justice has successfully used the necessity defense to win acquittals of homeless people charged with city or county laws against sleeping and camping. Marin warned